Hey, Tacoma. What's up? John Doherty here with Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate and always respectfully and mostly optimistically. Okay, let's get going on what's going on politics-wise, which in the final analysis is the main thing that matters when it comes to talking about climate change. We got COP26, we got an infrastructure bill, we got Build Back Better, we got some initiatives by Governor Jay Inslee, stuff going on right here in Washington, Tacoma, and around the world. Let's take a quick catch-up today. What does it all mean? Are we making progress or not? Are we making enough progress? And what can I do? What am I going to do? So to put things into perspective, let's start off by talking about the option of limiting warming to 1.5 degrees centigrade. Since the start of the Industrial Revolution, the time when we started pumping those fossil fuels out into the atmosphere, the fossil fuel emissions, carbon dioxide, methane, etc., out into the atmosphere, we've already increased the Earth's average temperature about 1.1 to 1.2 degrees centigrade. Well, we're already starting to experience consequences of that warming, so the more temperature goes up, the more of the consequences, and the scientific community has said that above 1.5 degrees, things get really gnarly. Of course, that's kind of an arbitrary figure in a way. There's nothing magical about that number of 1.5. It's just a place where science is telling us things get considerably worse, including hitting some tipping points where things start happening on their own, things outside of our control to end. Right now, fossil fuel emissions are within our control to end, but there are things out there like methane release from the tundra, etc., that once that starts, it forms a self-reinforcing cycle. So that's what we're talking about. A consortium of world scientists recently put out a report sketching out some of the consequences of exceeding 1.5 degrees of global warming increase. So some of those consequences, billions more people experience severe heat waves at least once every 5 years. Several hundred million people become exposed to climate-related risks and poverty, and that's several hundred million more. Coral reefs that support marine environments around the world could decline as much as 99%. Friends, the reefs are in big trouble just as it is, and if we exceed 1.5, they're going to be pretty much gone. Global fisheries down by millions of tons. Bottom line, going above 1.5 degrees of warming puts millions more at risk with heat waves, poverty, and so on, all but wipes out the coral reefs. Entire ecosystems rely on worldwide, and seas are rising and causing problems even more all around the world, including in some of our big cities. Short version, limiting temperature increase to 1.5 degrees is a worthwhile goal. So how does COP26, the infrastructure bill, etc., how do they play out in this 1.5 degree scenario? Should we be happy, sad, or indifferent to what's been going on recently? So what follows here is largely my own perception interpretation, so take it for what it's worth. The good news about COP26, and I think about climate change in general, is that both politicians and the populace are starting to pay attention to climate change in ways that they weren't doing 5 years ago. 5 years ago at Paris, promises were made, goals were set. We have achieved almost none of those promises, nor have most of those pledges been met. In this COP, amazingly, the term fossil fuels came up for the very first time. Really, prior to this, and all the COPs, all the talk about climate change, we were afraid to even whisper the words fossil fuels. We've known for decades that fossil fuel emissions are creating global warming, yet the folks at the COPs found it impossible to actually come out and say that. One wonders why. One doesn't wonder very hard, but one does wonder. So pledges at COP26 are expected to see the Earth warm 2.4 degrees centigrade. By that, what I mean is, if the pledges at COP26 are met, a huge if, then that's predicting a warming of 2.4 degrees centigrade. Some folks are celebrating because prior to the COP, the pledges were giving us a 2.7 degrees centigrade, a predicted climate change increase, temperature increase. But the 2.4, while it's better, reminding you, it's just pledges. The climate impacts are still well above those that we would see at 1.5 degrees centigrade. So the revision of pledges that brings things down from an expected global warming to 0.3 degrees, is that cause for optimism or celebration? I'll leave that up to you folks, the listeners, but nations are famous for not repeat, not living up to their climate and fossil fuel emitting pledge. Credit where credit's due. There was talk about fossil fuel subsidies at the COP26. Governments around the world spend billions and billions of dollars in direct and indirect subsidies to the fossil fuel industry. So let's put it simply here. We have this incredibly powerful, incredibly wealthy industry around the world, and taxpayers are being taxed to send money to those companies, to that industry, to produce, among other things, fossil fuel pollution that's leading to further costs and further deterioration of life here on Earth. That we are subsidizing this industry, not only around the world, but also right here at home, has got to be the definition of craziness. Yet the fossil fuel industries have had enough clout at COP to soften the language to the point where a lot of it is close to meaningless. So, full disclosure, I may be over-pessimistic about the effects of COP26. Right now, I'm basing my skepticism about whether these pledges will be met or not on past performance. And as you know, past performance is not necessarily predictive of future performance, so I'll keep an open mind and an open heart and hoping that nations will start taking their pledges seriously and will meet those pledges. And if they don't, they will become pariahs in the international community. The one thing for us to keep an eye on, and really just about the only thing that truly matters, is the carbon dioxide concentration in the atmosphere. And you can find that anytime you want just by doing a search on the internet. Last time I looked, it was about 420 parts per million, and scientists say maybe 350 parts per million, a safe level. So as long as that keeps going up, and it is still going up, we're in deeper and deeper trouble. So there's your measure of whether COP26 to be or will be or is effective or not. Now, there are some things that I would describe as worthwhile. One of them is that countries have agreed that they're going to return on a yearly basis to see how they're doing, rather than the five-year gap since the last COP. So that's a good thing. So overall, I'm going to give COP26 a letter grade of D. Not failing, but not enough to graduate either. Most of the optimism I hear coming from commentators about COP26, the positive comments are, well, at least we met, and at least we're going to meet again. And hey, we did use the term fossil fuel in our publications this time, so that's something. Pretty thin soup as far as I'm concerned, but we'll see. Okay, closer to home, let's talk about the infrastructure bill, which recently became law in the United States. There are some aspects of the infrastructure bill, which is now law, that do impact our climate situation. However, most of those items are involved related to climate change adaptation rather than mitigation. In other words, putting up a seawall to keep out a rising sea is adaptation. Reducing fossil fuel pollution is mitigation. The infrastructure bill is almost exclusively, as it relates to climate change, looking at adaptation. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I mean, we do have to defend ourselves against a changing climate. Best thing to do is to mitigate, but in the absence of mitigation, adaptation is a good thing. There are some mitigation things. One of them is some support for electric vehicle charging network and for a lower no emission system of school buses. I've often wondered why those school buses, with their relatively short runs twice a day, aren't electrified, getting charged up between runs. There are funds included that would be used to help adapt to natural events such as floods, wildfires, drought, heat waves, let's say drinking water in areas where there's drought, and even funds for relocation of entire vulnerable communities. You probably know that La Push is in serious trouble regarding sea level rise, a place where folks have lived for millennia, now under threat because of climate change and rising sea level. All in all, the infrastructure bill and climate is focused on adaptation, not mitigation. Seems like as a species, we like to do things that way. We'd rather deal with the consequences than deal with the causes of problems in the first place. And maybe given the nature of the beast, that's the best we can hope for from an infrastructure bill, but that's what it is. In terms of its approach to climate change, I'm going to give the infrastructure bill a C. I'm tempted to give the bill a B just because it is slightly bipartisan, and it's a sad commentary on our times that an infrastructure bill, a bill focused on airports, highways, bridges, etc., is considered by many as a partisan bill. Oh well. Okay, let's talk about Build Back Better. As I'm recording this, Build Back Better has been passed by the House and it's been sent over to the Senate. And whether it comes out of the Senate or not is a question mark. The question mark primarily is, does Joe Manchin like Build Back Better or not? If he likes it, it's probably going to go back to the House for some revision, and from there to President Biden. Build Back Better has $550 billion over the life of the bill that is earmarked for issues directly related to climate change. Things like high-speed rail projects that would reduce automotive traffic, reduce airplane flights, and by doing that, significantly reduce the amount of carbon dioxide that's being produced by transportation. One of the things that I find amazing is that there are funds in there to reduce methane emissions and waste from oil and natural gas operations. Well, that sounds kind of good, right? But, well, no, it's not, because what we're doing is having the taxpayers pick up the tab of the mess that the petroleum industry has left behind in uncapped wells. EPA says there's over 3 million wells around the United States that haven't been properly closed after the gas and oil that they were tapped into was gone, and then the owners of the well just walk away, declare bankruptcy, sell the wells to somebody who they then declare bankruptcy, etc. Once again, I guess that's just the nature of the beast these days. One of the initiatives in the bill that I really do like, and that is the post office is going to be buying 165,000 replacement vehicles over the next few years. Presently, they're planning on buying internal combustion engines, and this bill provides funds for electric vehicles. If I would try to think of a place where electric vehicles would serve us well, especially it would be with the U.S. Postal Service. Lower maintenance, no fossil fuel emissions, nice and quiet, comfortable vehicles for our postal workers to do their daily rounds. There are also funds designated for supporting communities that have been particularly hard hit by the fossil fuel industry. Once again, here we are as the taxpayers picking up the bill for what the fossil fuel industry has done, but not to over-repeat myself, I guess that's the nature of the beast. Fossil fuel industry is certainly not going to clean up their own mess. One of the particular bits of language, there's reforms for the oil and gas fees and royalties for extraction from public lands, and with the proviso that they were going to stop doing unnecessary industry giveaways. So some of those giveaways are necessary. Don't ever underestimate the power and money of petroleum. As I'm recording this, Build Back Better is in the hands of the Senate and Joe Manchin. There's one particular glimmer of hope, and that is that there's talk about putting a price on fossil fuels with the money being returned on a cashback basis to the populace. That money would go a ways to mitigating for families and individuals the additional cost from the fossil fuel fee, and it would also make cleaner energy sources more competitive, do go some ways to paying back for all of the costs that fossil fuel industry has put on us in terms of pollution, carbon dioxide, toxins, and so on. It's a small down payment, to be sure, but at least it's a step in that direction. So what grade would I give to Build Back Better? I'm going to give it a C-. There's some steps in the right direction, but far from adequate to get us to where President Biden has said we need to be. He's targeted a 50% reduction in fossil fuel emissions from 2005 levels and do that by 2030. The bill, as good as the sum of the steps are, doesn't get us there, and there are too many concessions, in my view, to timber, oil, and gas industries. So a C-. In the meantime, Governor Inslee was over at COP26, and he's leading a coalition of 68 state, city, and regional governments who pledged to halve their emissions by 2030 and get to net zero by 2050. Once again, I got to say, okay, pledge, quote unquote. We'll see. This group represents about 470 million people and 20% of the world's GDP. So it's a group with some clout. He also announced over there the Pacific Coast Collaborative. It's a low carbon construction task force finding ways to lower carbon footprint of buildings, construction materials, and methods. So also a good step. He announced an executive order to fully electrify Washington State's public fleet by 2035. That would be for light duty vehicles, and 2040 by medium and heavy duty. Would be so great to see our state government's vehicles roaming around the highways powered by electricity, good old hydropower from Pacific Northwest here, rather burning fossil fuels with all attendant problems that brings and sending the money down to Houston. So some real promise there. I'd give the group an A, except, well, they're a fairly small group when we look at the size of the problem in front front of us, but a lot of good ideas, and I love the way they're headed, so a B for effort and a B for attitude. Remains to be seen what they actually accomplish, of course. Well, that's a quick look at where we are, recent developments on the political scene. We got to keep our ear to the ground, and we have to raise our voices. As I say often, the least effective voice is the voice that's never raised, so raise your voice. I love to hear from you. Send me an email at john@ccltacoma.org. ccltacoma.org, that's the website for Citizens Climate Lobby Tacoma. I'm an activist with them. It's a good outfit, some good people, some good friendships, so check it out. You might find something there of value to you. If not CCL, find some other outfit, join your voice with others, and make a difference. A reminder that all Climate Talks and all locally produced programs are archived at the KTAH website. Just do an internet search, look under programming, and you'll find those archives. So anytime you want, anywhere in the world, you got a connection. So that's it for today. Here I am once again reminding you, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care.